Welcome to Talking Agility, a podcast from Accenture. Your host is Elitsa Nacheva.
In times of disruption, it can be hard to imagine what the new normal will look like. In stressful moments, we can get stuck in our old patterns and old ways of doing things. But people have always been resilient innovators, able to refine, redirect, and grow, even during uncertainty. My guest today believed that building a vision and strategy for growth starts with a simple question: what if? Ed Mehmet and Dave Roycroft are partner and director at Accenture's What If Innovation Firm. They work with our clients across industries all over the world with an experimentation-led approach to building a culture of innovation. William Blake said that the true method of knowledge is experiment. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with Ed and Dave, who joined me remotely from London today. Ed and Dave, welcome to Talking Agility. It's a pleasure having you here today.
Hello. Great to be here.
Hi, me too.
I'm really curious to hear what you're going to share with myself and our listeners. I would just jump straight into the first question. And I'd like you to start by asking you both to describe your approach and the kind of work you do with our clients.
So if I can lead off with just describing a little bit about what if and how we show up in the market. We talk about helping our clients with two things. One is creating what we call growth futures. And the other is building growth cultures, both Dave and myself representing both parts of the business. The type of work that we do is really thinking about the future and aligning an organization around what we call a worldview. And in that work, bringing an organization together, both its leaders and its operators, in creating a growth strategy. And we believe that growth strategy should be one that can face into whatever future the world might throw at it. So this approach we call adaptive strategy, and it's become, for obvious reasons, given the current global situation with COVID-19, it's become hyper-relevant.
And so I do most of my work in our leading growth cultures part of the business. And fundamentally, what we're trying to do there is think about the leadership, the culture, and the capabilities required to, I guess, unlock human potential and hardwire the organization for future readiness. And that can range from things like resetting and unifying the leadership team behind a energizing cultural ambition or agreed way of working. It can be about inspiring, activating, embedding new ways of working right from the executive level through the entire organization. And it can be about transforming an organization's culture and capability to be innovative, agile, and fundamentally to drive growth. And the reality is that these two parts of our business work together to do what we call driving innovation for growth. They're like a yin and a yang. So while they might feel different, actually we think they're two sides of the same coin, or they come together. Every inventing project is really a change project. It's about inspiring people to make the future real. So hopefully we can bring two sides of one conversation to this discussion today.
Absolutely. And that sounds really, really interesting. And you mentioned that you're driving innovation for growth. So let's talk about how you drive that innovation, because I know that change is a doing rather than a talking sport. So how do you do that innovation? Can you elaborate a little bit more on the experimentation side of your work, and how does it link to enterprise agility?
Great. I'll kick off here. So, how do we do our experimentation work and innovation work, and how does it link to enterprise agility? Well, why don't we start with what do we actually mean by enterprise agility? So, if I think about what is it enterprise agility, it's about an organization or perhaps a team's ability to respond rapidly and effectively to disruption, to threat, to opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's about the ability to be adaptive, to change, to effectively manage the business today and also think about how they can manage and move towards the business in the future. So fundamentally, it's about being able to work at pace and pivot, but maintain what you're doing today and move forward. We often talk about the need to be ambidextrous within sort of creating an agile organization. And then I guess, what do we mean by experimentation within that? Well, experimentation for me is it's the creative discipline of learning by doing. And I think it's important a couple of parts of that. One of which, you know, well, there's three parts which are worth pulling out, right? One is it's about learning. Fundamentally, it's all about learning. It's about doing it. It's about exposing our thinking, hypotheses to the real world as soon as possible. And it's a really creative process. Actually, it's creatively developing hypotheses, creatively thinking of fast ways you can test them and learn if they really work. And fundamentally, it's about building confidence in a new idea or a new way of doing something. It's about learning what has the greatest impact on your chosen audience, be that internal or external. It's about figuring out what works and what doesn't. It's about challenging and exploring our orthodoxies in the world. And actually really to understand the unintended consequences of our ideas as well. And like, how do those two things work together? Which I think was your question. And the reality is, in a world that's changing at an incredible pace, with continued disruption, the unforeseen and unforeseeable being just around the corner, the need to adapt and adjust and make most of opportunities or respond to threats or crisis at a short notice, an increasingly short notice. And whilst doing so, make sure that we're still delivering for customers. And that's at the heart of what we're doing. Then it feels like one of the main ways we're going to be able to do that is create a agile experimental approach that helps us learn and challenge our own preconceptions and continue to find value. Ed, what do you think?
Yeah, if I can just talk to our strategy and inventing work then, Dave. What I think is interesting in this work is, you know, strategy units and strategy teams and departments. I mean, typically, you know, you could argue that some of those parts of the business are, they're the last sort of ivory towers, if you like, within business. We talk about strategy being a contact sport, and actually its job should be about being seen in a modern business as an inspiration partner. And rather than, you know, trying to build strategy from, you know, essentially a collection of small people, you know, let's call them leaders or let's call them the strategy department, they have to actually reach out into their organization and build it collaboratively. Building it collaboratively with operators, the people who actually do the work and drive the business, and also doing it through two other lenses. One is an outside-in approach. So, I mean, it's novel, but wouldn't it be wonderful to have the customer in part of that strategy development and formulating that with growth and value creation linked to, dare I say it, things that customers want and need, things that create the most value in customers' lives. And I say customer, I mean B2B and B2C, so customers and consumers, partners I include in that. And the second thing is being future back in how we think about that. So there's two schools of thought really, which, and they're not opposed, they're actually complementary in this type of work. One is that we can use the existing value pools of today to understand how value is captured and created. And that's a very analytical, traditional consulting approach. The second is more novel, which is actually being future back. And that's using signals and shifts and actually trying to be really provocative and really inspiring about what we think might happen in the future. And I think importantly there, that's about multiple futures, right? Plural, not singular. And we do that through storytelling, right? We storytell the things we think may or may not happen. And what's wonderful about this and how it links to enterprise agility is you're letting go of the need to be right. And I think that's a big thing. And Dave mentioned learning, but ego is a big part of this too for me. It's about letting go of the need to be right, having this sort of discovery mindset and really pushing out beyond your own expertise and making connections and new connections with others. I think this discipline of sort of letting go of the need to be right and ego, I mean, and letting go of ego, they're big thought ideas really around how we do strategy and innovation work. And we talk a lot at What If about being in this learner mindset and really valuing a speed of learning above all else. And I think that's how it shows up for me when we talk about it at an enterprise agility level.
I would sort of build on that, Ed. Like I, something we talk about quite a lot at What If, maybe overuse it, but the idea of a strong point of view lightly held sort of really encapsulates what great sort of leadership or strategy or sort of innovation can look like in this space, which is you do need to have a really strident, optimistic view of where the world is going, where your organization can win in that world. But you need to do so in a way that's lightly held and is you're prepared to let go and you're prepared to test and learn and you're prepared to try something and accept that it might not be the right thing and not get caught in a sort of sunk cost effect where you sort of keep spending and pushing forward to sort of save your own sort of vanity, I suppose.
So, I mean, what interesting insights. I've been just making notes, and you said letting go of the need to be right. This is incredibly important, yet it's so hard to do. And actually, it's a nice segue to my next question, which is related to mindsets being at the heart of that ability to let go. And you spoke about, you know, adaptiveness, flexibility, creativity, collaboration, which all leads to the growth mindset. You also mentioned discovery and learner mindset. But what are some of the mindsets that are needed around experimentation and doing successful experimentation? And how do you think you help leaders develop an agile mindset through that?
Oh, that's a big question, isn't it? So I think the, you know, so we've touched on a couple of them already, but I think they're worth pointing out. So we, again, something we talk about a lot is the difference between a learner and a knower mindset. And, you know, I think what we've touched on already is baked into this, which is, you know, a knower mindset is someone who, they feel like they know everything, and actually they spend their time defending their existing kind of point of view, their knowledge base. There's a bit of the paradox of expertise in this, that you get rewarded, promoted, and pushed up in an organization by your experience, what you do, what you've done, what you've become known for, particularly historically. And at that point, your sort of value sits in your experience and your expertise. And it's a challenge to actually be someone who, at that point, maybe even more disconnected from their customers than they've ever been, or the zeitgeist of the moment, or the future direction of, you know, societies and customer needs. And so I think what we're talking about at this point is a learner mindset, which is where you're prepared to explore ideas. You're looking to discover new solutions together with others. And actually, a learner uses that knowledge as a scaffolding, I guess, to extend and explore and move on to new things. Learning for us in that mindset is about progress. It's about exploration. It's hypothesis led. It's about understanding what your own assumptions are around the things you're doing and your organization. And when you're ever in the mode of polishing and perfecting, I think you're probably moving towards a knower mindset. And how do you get leaders to do it? I think there's structures that you can put into place to encourage it in an organization. There are rewards that you can put around it that I think support the right level of risk taking. I think fundamentally it does start right from the very top in my experience. Someone with a long-term view of where they're going, someone who kind of makes a portfolio approach to where they put their investments and their bets, and, you know, looks at returns coming from an overall portfolio rather than a few different ideas. I think actually, you know, from my experience, when we've been encouraging leaders to go on this journey, starting small, getting people to try things out, creating wins, replaying those wins as stories that you can spread through the organization as the new way that things get done. And in doing so, start to sort of liberate people, make people feel it's okay, and build in a real culture of retrospective sort of pivot type conversations where actually when things work, you stop and you explore why it worked and what you can replicate and take forward. And when it doesn't work, you do and have the same conversation. I actually think too often when things do work, we assume it's because of our brilliance. when in reality, it's probably, you know, when something works or doesn't work, you know, there's so many factors there. And I don't think we spend enough time really exploring that. But yeah, it does have to be built into the culture of an organization right from the top, in my experience.
I'd love to bring a few other things in my work that I feel definitely are linked into either mindset or behavior. I think there's something about vulnerability in leaders and the teams that they build around them, and that will drive a couple of either intended or unintended consequences. But if you're a vulnerable leader, you're probably more likely to show up as a learner and be okay with saying that you don't know what the answer is, rather than blagging it or trying to fake it, or leaning on your past experience and assuming that's going to help you here. And I'm talking specifically in a discovery mode, right, where a lot of our teams find themselves hunting for new human problems to associate with a new business, a new product, a new service. And in that mindset, you know, being vulnerable and kind of going, this is fun, isn't it? We're all a bit comfortably lost, and we're wandering around this topic, and how much fun is that, right? If you had a knower mindset around that, you would sort of be trying to straight line your way and fast track to that answer. You probably would be less comfortable in the sort of wandering around that topic. So vulnerability is a big thing for me. The second thing I think that is diversity. If you value diversity and you really believe that you should be building a team around you, then you will have diversity in all of its forms, not just in the way people look, but really in the way people think. Mm-hmm. And not even in where people have come from as well, or you know, as in their backgrounds. So that the thinking diversity, how they see the world, means that you're essentially covering for your own orthodoxy and your own blind spot. But that's only good, right, if you are the vulnerable leader who can actually create a very level team where everybody has a voice, because they can call you out where you're making an assumption, or they can call you out when we often call it N equals one, right? If you're doing research and you start telling stories about how you see the world, and you do that too, you're starting to create an N equals one frame around it. In other words, you assume that everyone else in the world sees the world the same way as you. And of course, in a diverse team, they can call you out on that. Last thing I would say on this in terms of a sort of behavioral or mindset is really about two things, really. One is discipline. These things don't happen by accident, right? Sometimes you get lucky, but the act of experimentation is a very disciplined and deliberate act. You are choosing to let go of assumptions, to surface them, thinking out loud, you know, get them out and in the room so others can live with them. And you're then saying, let's go and test them, right? They're falsifiable statements that you can go and prove or disprove. And actually, if you're wrong or you're right, you're still learning. You're learning at the same rate. So I think that's really powerful. The second thing I mentioned there, so there were two things, is this idea of empathy. Mm-hmm. If you have high empathy, you're able to, what I often say to my kids is like, you're able to read the room. Like, look mm-hmm. around you. How is your actions impacting the other people around you? And that's true on an experiment, right? You're actually saying, is this playing out the way we thought it would? Are we learning as fast as we thought we would? Are people responding to our offers or our development or our product in the way that we thought they would? And you're able to respond to that quite neutrally. But I think this idea of having been really, really high empathy, being really high contextually aware, having the discipline to structure your experiments in a sort of scientific-led way, and being vulnerable enough to have others in a diverse team call you out on your thinking, those are super important tenets for me.
These are absolutely fabulous suggestions around the mindset, and I really, really love everything that you've shared. I also wanted to kind of echo something that you said around diversity, which is something that I've also come across under the name of cognitive diversity. More specifically, I was attending a talk and reading a book by Matthew Syed called Rebel Ideas, The Power of Diverse Thinking. And I'll recommend to our listeners, if they haven't come across that book, to maybe have a go at reading it, because it really examines the power of cognitive diversity, what Ed was describing as the ability to think differently about the world around us. And it explains really how to harness unique perspectives, the pool of our collective intelligence, and really tackle some challenges. And it really kind of links to what Ed, you were describing as not just how we look, but also the diversity of thought. So I just wanted to throw out that there, because Matthew said he's one of my favorite business authors, and I thought it was really appropriate to mention now. So on to my next question. It kind of links to both how experimentation works and then the mindsets needed around experimentation. But it's really around kind of getting into the practicality of things, of how do you get an organization to work in a new way or to change mindsets, in fact. And how does asking what if lead to behavioral change?
Excellent. Great question. So I love to sort of talk a little bit about how I think about creating the sort of energy, direction, and movement that you've described, and bring it to life with an example. I actually think there are moments in every organization's sort of transformational journey that require an unreasonable injection of momentum. And one of the things that you can do is find that moment and tap into it, whether it's a reinvention,
because the strategy demands a new way of working, or there's a new organization structure or a new leadership team. Like find those critical acceleration points and use them to find focus, energy, and to create collective action amongst the leaders in the organization. And I believe that will fuel the journey forward. In doing that, I think you can then really, once you've got the leadership team kind of unified and reset around an energizing cultural ambition, then it's about how do you accelerate the adoption of the right set of behaviors and mindsets that will help deliver that commercial strategy. And as you mentioned earlier, this idea of change being a doing sport, not a talking sport, that's at the heart of how we think about this, that you can talk to death about how you want people to behave. And quite often people intellectually get it. Mm-hmm. They aren't going to disagree with the need to be more collaborative, more innovative, that they need to show more integrity. But actually it's about what does that mean in the real world? And so I think creating a structure for people with inside an organization to try on these new ways of working once they've been identified is critically, critically important. One of the ways that we do that is we use something called behavioral experimentation. We have a great story from the last couple of years. We've been working with Lloyds Banking Group, and they had actually sort of launched a 3-year strategy to transform themselves in a sort of digital world. They invested huge amounts in it, and they thought about the financial needs, the customer needs, and in order to make the shift that they want, they realized that their 70,000 colleagues needed the sort of cultural transformation that was key to delivering that strategy. And at the heart of that was a need to speed up the adoption and embed their values and behaviors, their group behaviors and their leadership behaviors. And so we created an approach, we called it behavioral experiments, and it's based on an experimental test and learn approach, where we create the conditions for small teams to intentionally use the behaviors that they need, but to use them to tackle everyday challenges through a series of small experiments. And like what it did is it prioritized doing over thinking and passion over process, so that people could feel the results fast, and teams could start to build new habits by applying those behaviors straight away. So it still has the discipline that Ed was describing earlier, and it has the creativity, but it also allows people to gain control over their immediate environment. So they translate a behavior into an action, and then they test it out. And then we built in sprints and reflective pivot meetings, so people were constantly able to explore the value that they were creating, how it felt, and what would need to change in their environment to continue to accelerate this adoption of the behaviors. So we created 2-week cycles. Colleagues got to feel the benefits of taking more risks, or learning a speed, as you could call it, mm-hmm. feeling what the behavior felt like, as well as deliver a tangible outcome. And actually, we didn't stop there with teams. What we did is we captured the stories of each of those teams, which I believe are the currency of culture. So Ed, you talked about these already, but if you think about a culture in an organization, it's often not what's written down. It's often not what sits in a performance management system. It's the stories that describe how things get done around here, how they get done productively, and how people get rewarded and recognized for behaving in certain ways. And so our job was to build a newsroom where we could capture, write, and share the new stories of the way things are done. And it was designed to have behavioral impact, business impact, commercial impact, and create a movement, so that as people looked around and tried on the new behaviors, they didn't see everyone else doing the old stuff. They started to see everyone doing it together. And it's had huge impact. We've seen impact in both behavior change, which we've measured in the organization using sort of diagnostic tools. We've seen people continue to use the behaviors, so the sort of habitual behavior change has happened. But we also saw time saving, cost saving, process improvement, simplification, customer experience scores go up. So positive impact that meant that people would continue to want to work in this way. We saw employee engagement increase. And Lloyds were brilliant enough that they won Transformation and the Initiative of the Year at the Business Culture Awards in January this year. So a fantastic kind of story of using experimentation to give people the permission to try something new at pace, to get those assumptions and preconceptions out, whether they're good or bad, and get them to try them and see if they can use them or not. And then to create stories, and fundamentally to create envy so other people get involved in the movement.
That's a really fascinating example, and I'm really glad you brought it up because it really kind of brings to life everything that you mentioned in my previous few questions. And it does sound like what you have managed to achieve with LBG has created the snowball effect, which is then trickling into other functions and other parts of the business to start adopting the same ways of working, which really sounds great. And are there any final reflections from both of you? I know we've covered a whole host of different topics, from describing your approaches, that you work from the perspective of growth future and growth culture. And then we talked about experimentation and the link to enterprise agility, touched on the mindsets needed for experimentation, helping leaders kind of develop those. And then finally, how do you get an organization to work in that new way, experiment and really kind of demonstrate that case for success? Is there anything else that you wanted to mention that we may not have covered that you think is valuable to our listeners?
I mean, it's Ed here. I wouldn't mind sort of talking about just how loaded a term, you know, agility is, right? I mean, and really probably misunderstood. So I think there's a couple of facets to this. I mean, one is, you know, as a term, it's naturally sort of born out of the IT function.
Right? Yes.
And therefore, a huge part of the organization sort of shrug their shoulders and go, well, that doesn't apply to me. I think that's, and Dave's story talked about the whole enterprise and all those different functions in a business that saw immediate benefit from a new way of working. I mean, that's the first thing. The second thing is, I often talk about this idea of, imagine a sort of market conspiracy and a management conspiracy, right? And the market conspiracy is, I'm developing new products and for some reason they're not landing in the marketplace in the way that I want them to. In other words, they're not as successful, right? They're not as desired. They're not having the same commercial output. And a management conspiracy would be, you know, I've given my team and my resources all of the skills and training and assets that they need to be successful, but for some reason they're not walking the talk, right? So these idea of a market conspiracy and a management conspiracy, for me, they basically set up the idea that that people should feel more empowered in their organization and to go and create value or create change. And the Lloyd's story that Dave has talked to, you know, for me, it's really about empowerment. It's the message there, right? We're creating a culture that can question, challenge, and act. Mm-hmm. And not just that, like in the context of a market conspiracy or a management conspiracy, like there isn't one here, people. People want you to come to work and be successful, right? Or people want you to develop products that scale, right? So the business's role in lining up the right teams, the right people, the right frameworks, bringing them together, those resources, and allowing people to be successful. And you get into that mindset, it's about really using the organization as a platform for doing great work. And I think, you know, a lot of people want to come to work and do their best work. They don't want to be mediocre. They don't want to be held back. They don't want to feel frustrated. So I think evolving this narrative around, you know, what is actually enterprise agility is about value and speed of learning above all else, going to try some new things and working collaboratively and building an organization that can really think for itself. It doesn't need to defer to others. So the closer you can get that decision making to the point of value, and the faster you can make that decision confidently, then you're into an organization that's, I'd say it's evolved, right? It's almost like an organism rather than an organization. It's thinking for itself. It's a living business, to use that Accenture term.
Fabulous. And Dave, is there any final thoughts of wisdom that you'd like to share over and above what we have spoken about today?
Maybe if I think about how I see the conditions need to be within an organization to make possible some of the things that Ed was describing. So firstly, the behavioral science concept of social proof shows how sort of finely attuned human beings are to monitoring what everybody else is doing, even if it's subconscious. We use that. We use the idea of what we see other people doing or hear other people doing as a mental shortcut to decide on what the appropriate behavior would be if we're not sure how to show up. And so we need to be really careful about how we reassure people that they can make those decisions, that they can test and learn, that they can try things out and it not work as long as they are learning. And so being really careful about how we create the conditions within an organization where that is true, I think is absolutely critical. And also to allow the decision making to get as close as possible to where the value is, as Ed described, requires real clarity on the strategic direction of the organization, the commercial and innovation and growth direction, the ways of working that are expected. If you don't provide that decision framework, people can't feel comfortable about doing things and making fast decisions. It's always going to get pushed up in a fearful organization. And the reality is, I mean, this is all about agility. So if that's true, then momentum has to be forefront, not perfection. And to do that in that kind of decision-making criteria, that vision, that view of the organization's direction, you need a simple idea, something that's easy to remember, something that's easy to get behind and to get going with. So be wary of the 100-page deck.
Yeah. You know,
what's the 40-word version of that that people can take out, use, and apply, and they can sort of have in their back pocket, gives them confidence to try things out and see if the learning is helping them move forward towards that sort of future growth agenda.
Absolutely. That is fabulous final sort of prompt that our listeners, leaders can take on board and consider when they're getting on that path to transformation and rapid innovation. So thank you very much, Ed and Dave, from Accenture's What If Innovation Forum. It has been a fascinating conversation for me. Thank you for sharing your insights, your learnings, your experience with us. We'll make sure to signpost our listeners to the What If page on our blog. And really, thank you very much for your time.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Me too. Thank you so much.
What a fascinating conversation with Ed and Dave today. We're going to link to their page on our blog, and I think you'll find their work and their way of working as interesting as I do. And as always, we'd love to hear your thoughts about the podcast. Please rate us, like us, comment on your favorite podcast platform, or send us a note through accenture.com/talkingagility. You can also find me on Twitter and LinkedIn. I'm Elitsa Nacheva, your host. Thank you for listening.